This is episode 28, and today I'm going to talk about how trauma can affect parenting and how they kind of go together sometimes. As many of you know, in the past I've shared some vulnerable parts of me about my postpartum depression, anxiety, about my depression in general, and about going through childhood trauma. I have said that I haven't gotten into complete specifics, but basically, you know, I was molested as a child and by someone who was trusted, and it took years of suppressing, and when I say years, 25 years, because it happened when I was really little. And it took to go to regression therapy and to go through regular therapy, as well as psychic mediums that I had gone to, and spiritual teachers, intuitives, that all confirmed the same thing that I already knew was true. However, I didn't want to believe it. I wanted to put it away, throw it in a box, and lock up the key like it had been for the 25 years. When it finally came out, of course, it rocked the whole family. My parents and my husband were my biggest supporters, as well as my little ones, even though they had no idea what was going on. But, you know, their joy, their happiness, their smiles is what brought me out of a lot of my intrusive thoughts, my depression. Because at the time when I first, it's going to be 4 years in September since I started this journey of awakening and growth and learning more about what was affecting me. Since then, you know, I have done a lot of work, but it's been 4 years and I've grown a lot. But in the beginning, it was, I would get very bad intrusive thoughts. And when I say intrusive thoughts, like suicidal thoughts and things of thinking that I don't want to be here no more. And, you know, what's the point? And just all kinds of things that, you know, what if I just drove my car on the freeway and crashed into something, or like all kinds of things. Obviously, when I didn't have the kids in the car, I would allow these thoughts to happen because it was easy to be like, okay, well, you know, I don't have any kids yet. And this all started when I was pregnant with my second, when I was going through this therapy. And sometimes I blame myself because I do feel like, even though your baby is in the womb, that they do feel those feelings and they do get the anxiety. So I do think my second does have a lot of anxiety and a lot of separation anxiety and things like that as a result of what I was going through. Obviously, I know with COVID hitting and all these other factors are toppled on top of her too. I try to really let her express her feelings and know that this is where I go into a little bit gentle parenting, is that it's okay for her to throw tantrums as long as she knows that she can't throw, hit, hurt others or hurt herself. And to also know how to find healthy calming mechanisms that can help her to regulate those emotions. So I do gentle parent in that sense. But sometimes I lose my cool and I yell, and I'm not talking about screaming, yelling. I always feel like I have to defend that because I feel like in this day and age, anything you say can be taken so out of context. You know, I'm not an abusive parent. I'm not like screaming, yelling at my kids and like trying to scare them. No, you know, sometimes it comes out like, you guys stop, please. Like I already told you like 50 million times, you know? So you get me, you get me. If you don't, then you're the one of the people that's probably taking it too extreme. But I say this because when people have trauma that are underlying when they become parents, sometimes those triggers happen. And by triggers, I mean like when your kids are yelling themselves and they're fighting or arguing, that could be a trigger. If you see a show or something that you remember as a flashback when you're a kid, that could be a trigger. If you hear a name on a television program, that could be a trigger. There are so many triggers that can happen, and yeah, you're not going to go through life trying to censorship every trigger out there, because reality is that if you try to censor everything, you're going to probably have a really hard life, because you just can't. There's so many things that you have to just navigate through and try to figure out how to best navigate the situation for yourself. I've had to learn that, you know, like, we don't live in a plastic bubble, and we shouldn't want our children to live in a plastic bubble either. So when parenting and trauma come together, sometimes it's difficult, because you have to figure out how to regulate your own emotions. It's like reparenting yourself and trying to figure out, okay, how can I take a deep breath and figure out why, for one, am I being triggered? Two, what are my kids mirroring to me that I need to learn from this? And then three, how can I navigate this situation and make it where it's the best possible outcome for all of us involved? Okay, so let me think if I can think of an example here. So one of the things that I try to teach my kids is that I want them to not be afraid to do new things. In the same token, I want them to know that they got to try everything at least once. So it's kind of like, in a way, that you do have to balance. And I've said before in the past that I don't like the word balance sometimes, because I feel like I'm trying to be on a tightrope and I'm balancing my whole life. And that doesn't feel really like cool. You know, sometimes I would say it's more like a teeter-totter. Like, you're going kind of one way and going the other way. You have to figure out, you know, going up and down. But actually, you could probably use a teeter-totter in the marriage. Like, just hear me out on this. Is because, you know, you're not going to go up if someone's not sitting on the other side going down. It's that. And I guess, in a sense, it does balance. You go back and forth, you know? So, as a parent, you kind of have to work with your significant other to parent. And yes, there are single moms out there, and all props to you. I mean, at the end of the day, if I was by myself, I would figure it out. If my husband was by himself, he would figure it out. But when we work together, when we work as a team, and we use our village, even if we don't have a significant other, then it alleviates a lot of the things that we put on our shoulders. It gives us the weight lifted and the burdens, like that feeling of always having to do everything yourself, or that if you don't do it, then you're going to be a bad mom, like I talked in the previous episode, is this weight that we just carry on ourselves. And it's like, why do we do that to ourselves? Well, people that also parent and that are parents and that have been survivors of trauma, I think that it even weighs heavier, because it's like you want to try your best to not repeat the mistakes of the past or generational traumas. And this doesn't just have to be from, you know, typically people bring up the way they were raised by their parents, but trauma doesn't necessarily come from always from parents. It can come from so many other different sources. Basically, any person that has come into your child's life can cause trauma, depending on how they respond to your child and how your child takes that in. So it's not necessarily the action or what they said or what they did, is how your child reacts to it, how they receive it, how they perceive it, you know. So a lot of people think trauma is the actual event. It's not the event. Trauma is a result of how it affected you from the event. So so I just wanted to jump on here, because I feel like it's been a really hard lesson for me going through this the last few years, especially because when I had my firstborn, I didn't really understand a lot of things of why I acted certain ways, and there was just a lot of signs that showed me that, you know, I was reacting more than a mama bear. Like, it was like too extreme. Like, I was worried and had anxiety about everything. And you know, at this time my memories were repressed a lot, suppressed, and a lot of things were things that I didn't want to go down the rabbit hole, so I just ignored it. And then when I was pregnant with my second, that's when I started seeking more guidance and information. And then I remember my very first spiritual reading, a couple of my family members came through, and one of them had said, you know, I understand you more than you know, and I went through a lot of stuff that you went through, and you know, if you knew half of it, you need to start living, he told me. You need to start realizing, he said, do you know that you're alive? You know, and the reading came through. Do you know that you're alive, that you're breathing, that you're here? And then, of course, they shared a lot of intricate details that I told nobody. I mean, nobody. And then there was stuff that, you know, like only my parents and my husband had known. And it reaffirmed things. And at that point, I didn't know yet. I was just like, okay, I guess I have to find out more stuff. And so I was guided to go seek regression therapy. And after the regression therapy, it was clear as day, and all these memories started flooding back besides the actual session that came out. And then after that, I started going to regular therapy. Now I'm seeking more to go specifically into trauma therapy, because I know that there's people that specifically deal with trauma, and I want to find someone who can help me navigate trauma and parenting triggers. I think I've been doing a pretty good job, but there's some times that I just can't handle it. I flip out and I have to go, and by flip out, I mean like I have to go in the bathroom and cry, and I have to release those emotions, because otherwise I just hold them in, and it gets to a point I get so overwhelmed and almost like panic attack. And I've been there before, where I've been very depressed and anxious, and I don't want to go to that place again, because that's when the intrusive thoughts begin. So I'm sharing all this because I feel that it's very important that, you know, for others that might be listening, to know that you're not alone if you're a mom that has gone through some kind of trauma. And everybody's trauma is different. Everybody reacts to events differently in their trauma. A lot of people have in the past associated PTSD with people that have served in the military only. And while military, of course, a lot of people that have been to wars and seen the unimaginable understandably have come home with PTSD. However, it's not just people that have seen a war. Like, it depends on how a person responds or takes in what happened to them, whether it, you know, be molestation, sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse, childbirth trauma, all kinds of things like that, you know, rape. And I just want to take a moment to say, I am sorry that happened to you. I am sorry that happened to you. Again, I am sorry that happened to you. And if you never felt like you could be heard before, you can be heard now. You can use your voice if you want. Journal, write it down, whatever you need to do to release what has happened. And of course, it's never going to completely go away. That's not the goal here. The goal is for you to not be stuck by your trauma, to not be stuck by what happened, and not be defined by what happened to you. You are not what happened to you. Actually, there's probably so much that you have to give, and so much of you that you need to give to the world. And when I say give to the world, you probably already feel like, I already given a lot. No, it's not that. It's your story. Your story to help others, that people that feel that they have never been heard before. It's your story to give, that right now someone can hear and be like, wow, I'm not alone. I'm not the only person that has gone through this or felt this way. That's what I mean by give back. But only when you're ready, only when you feel it's right. And you may never want to share your story with, you know, anybody, but even if you can just tell one person or write it down, that would be an amazing feat for you, because it takes a lot of courage to finally say, this did happen to me. But you know what? Even though it happened to me, I'm not defined by it. I'm not what happened to me. I am who I am because I chose to be the best version of myself. Nobody made me that way. Nobody decided that this was my path or they can make it better for me. I decided that I wasn't going to be defined by any of that event or any of those things that were said to me. And I want to also say that, you know, because trauma is different levels of how people experience it, like, you know, someone's one trauma to another trauma might be more traumatic for somebody than another person. Everybody experiences things differently. We have to also think about the people that cause the trauma in the way, because every scenario is different. Like, for example, your parent might have caused some kind of emotional trauma. Maybe they did it once, maybe they did it twice, maybe they did it 1,000 times. If they did it a couple times, it probably just came out from something that they had got from how they were raised, how they were brought up. And I'm not saying it's okay by any means, so please do not get that wrong. What I'm saying is that sometimes sitting down with people that have caused some type of trauma and explaining to them, you know, what they did to you and understanding maybe why that came out from them, might also help. And that doesn't work for every situation. This is not a one size fits all. This is just one of those things that might speak to one of you that's listening. Because for example, I'm never going to sit down with the person that molested me and took my childhood away. I wrote him a letter and he denied it, and he caused so much damage. And this is more than I've ever shared before, but it's like, you know, I'm tired. I'm exhausted. It's caused so much havoc in my life. And it took a lot for me to finally get to a place where I decided that, you know, I'm not going to let it define me. And I'm going to be the best version of myself, especially for my kids. And, but, you know, sometimes like I lose my cool and I yell, and I don't even like that, because I feel like, you know, I don't want my kids to ever feel like they have to go vent to a therapist about mom and how I sometimes like would yell, or, you know, I mean, it's not that bad. I make it way worse than it is in my own head. And that's why I have to realize, because my girls are so smart, especially, you know, my oldest, because she's the one that is older, so she talks the most, and my middle is still, you know, forming sentences and everything. But my oldest, I know I'm doing well, because my oldest, she retains so much stuff, and she is very good about establishing her boundaries and saying no, and I want my privacy, and she knows about her body anatomy, and she knows about that it doesn't matter if it's adult or a kid, that she deserves respect. And that there's a way to go about it if she doesn't feel respected, to tell another trusted adult or grown up, or if she can't come to us right away. And she always knows that she can come talk to us about anything, that we will not get upset with her, she will not get in trouble, and she can always be honest with us. She's a great, amazing big sister. She watches out for her sisters. And I never want anything to happen to her. And I know the quote I always remember, and I think it's in Finding Nemo. Marlin, I think that's the dad's name, he says to Dory, like, I'm basically says something along the lines like, Nothing bad is supposed to happen to him. Like, he's supposed to protect Nemo. And Dory tells him, if you never allowed anything to happen to him, then nothing good would happen to him either. And I remember that because it's like, it's true. It's like, we want to keep our kids in a bubble, but we can't, you know, we can't protect them from everything. All we can do is arm them with the right tools and the right resources to let them know and make them feel empowered and let them know the power of no, let them know the boundaries. And even if your child is ever put in an uncomfortable situation, to not give in to peer pressure. And even if they tell them, I don't want to be your friend, or we're not going to hang out, or thanks a lot for telling on me, or you're a tattletale, or anything like that, that those aren't good friends. And I've explained that to, especially to my oldest, and she's starting to step more into that, you know. And granted, is she never going to be put in a situation where it makes her feel uncomfortable? Probably not. Am I always going to be there to be her knight in shining armor? Probably not. But I want to know that if she is in a situation, that she knows how to navigate that situation, so she feels empowered, that she feels that, like, her voice is heard and never silenced. So it's hard because, you know, she sometimes gets a little bit mouthy with me. And even as little as she is, she's five, and I have to remind her, listen, like, you're being a little rude right now, how you're talking to me. I don't deserve that. You know, I deserve respect just like you deserve respect. And it's not about I'm the parent, you're the child. I don't like that. I don't, because a lot of people think, oh, your kid's going to walk all over you in the future, and oh, good luck, you know, and all those kind of things. But no, I'm teaching my kid to speak up when it's wrong. I'm teaching my child that she does deserve respect just as anybody else on this planet. Doesn't matter how little you are, you deserve respect. And people think it's jokingly, like even tickling and stuff like that. When a kid is saying stop or no, like, yeah, they're laughing at first, but if they say stop, stop means stop, no means no. End of story. Because let me tell you one thing that teaches them as far as triggers go and trauma goes. What that says to me is, even though they're playing, that they think in their minds, like, oh, I said no, but it's okay because it's still kind of fun, you know? So, you know, my no doesn't really mean too much. And I could be looking into it more than it is, but we should always respect stop means stop and no means no, no matter what. And if we teach our children that, then they'll also respect others when they say stop or no, or I don't like that, I don't want to play that, that doesn't feel right, this is making me uncomfortable. All those kind of phrases are phrases I teach my children. If you don't want to be my friend, that's okay. I'll be friends with someone that's going to treat me with respect. Because guess what? They're going to encounter so many people that are going to want them to do something that they don't feel comfortable with. And if they don't start getting uncomfortable, they don't start feeling comfortable about getting uncomfortable, then they're not going to speak up for themselves. I've, as a parent, had to have uncomfortable conversations because something might have made, you know, my kids uncomfortable, but I got to speak up as a parent. Like, it's not fun, you know, to be in awkward situations, but you have to do what you have to do as a parent, and you have to teach your children how to be okay with not always pleasing people, not always making people happy. Those are all things from a parent and a person who has gone through trauma and who has lived with it for so many years that not anybody in my family really even knows about it. And I was the happy-go-lucky kid. I played independently. I smiled. But when I think back, there was a lot of signs that were there that nobody wanted to see. And it was either one of those things where it's just like, oh, maybe, you know, I'm seeing too much into it. But your kids have body language just as anybody else. they will tell you if they're uncomfortable with somebody or something's not right. And I'm not saying don't start accusing so-and-so of like what a XYZ. It's not that. But if your kid doesn't want to hug or kiss or, you know, anything like that to a family member or to a friend, don't make them. Please do not make them. Let them tell you what they're comfortable with. Who says that you have to say hi and bye with your body? It doesn't have to be physical. Even a high five can sometimes be okay with a child if they're okay with that. But you can just say hi, bye, you know. But in a lot of cultures, it is almost like frowned upon if you don't say bye to your, you know, abuelita or your grandparents or whoever. And it's like, do not make them again, because anybody can be capable of doing something horrible and bad and the unimaginable. And it's, again, not to accuse every single person or to always think that someone is going to do something to your child, but you have to be on some kind of alert still. You can't be so trusting that you don't trust what your kids are trying to tell you. If they are trying to express to you in their own language that they do not want to go to somebody's house, maybe find out why they don't want to go there or why they don't want to hug or kiss. And don't make it a big deal. Just talk to them normal. Hey, so, you know, I noticed the other day you didn't really want to say bye to so-and-so. Like, is everything okay? How do you feel about that? And let them tell you. Don't put words in their mouth. You know, just say, you know, how do you feel about that? You know, kind of try to get an answer. If they're just like nonchalant, oh, I just don't want to. Okay, well, you know, you don't have to hug or kiss. You can just say bye. It's just respectful just to say bye. And that doesn't mean that you have to high five or hug or kiss or anything that you, a kiss on the cheek that you don't want to do. Just say, okay, bye, so-and-so, I'll see you tomorrow, or I'll see you next time, or whatever you feel comfortable with. Mommy and Daddy are right here. If you ever need to talk to us about anything, we want you to feel safe, and we want you to feel comfortable. So don't do anything you ever feel uncomfortable about. Do you know what uncomfortable means? Do you know what comfortable means? And kind of, like, bring it down to their level and explain it to them. I think that people take for granted that kids are so much smarter than we want to believe. And if you explain it to them, oh, you can't imagine the words that they'll start using on their own and the things that they pick up. I mean, it amazes me every day. My oldest, what she comes up with and how she comes to her own conclusions about things and how she expresses herself. Like, that's what reminds me that, you know, I should be a really proud mom because I am doing a really good job, you know, raising her to use her voice and to express herself and to tell me when she doesn't want to do something or to tell me when, you know, something is bothering her. You know, sometimes it's hard because you want your kids to do all these activities and all these fun things, but she kind of checked me today because she told me, you know, like, I don't want to go to this audition thing that we're going to have her do. And I wanted her to at least go to meet with the lady so we could find out more information, but she kept telling me, I don't want to do it, even though before she had told me many times she wants to. And I kept trying to push it, but then, you know, now I'm realizing as I'm going through this podcast that that's not the right thing to do. She's telling me what she wants and what she feels. And yeah, I want her to experience new things and try new things. But usually when my daughter's pretty adamant about things, she really knows she doesn't want to do it. I mean, she loves dance. She loves all the things that she's involved in now. So I know she loves those things and she wants to continue those things. And I do check-ins regularly with her. Do you still love it? Do you still want to do it? Do you, you know, because you can always tell me, yes, mom, I like it. You know, I want to still do this. Is there anything that you don't want to do anymore? No, I like it. You know, so when it came to this, I saw an opportunity for her, but maybe she's just not ready for that. Or maybe that's not her path. I don't know, but I had to kind of push away my own, I guess, ego and tap more into my intuitiveness and think about what is it that is really coming to me. And, you know, I think that that's where, again, trauma and parenting, you have to navigate. You can't let your experiences be their experiences. And I can't project my fears onto my child, but I can do my best by arming her with the tools and resources that she needs to make the right decisions for herself. And yeah, you might think, oh, she's five, you're a parent, you're supposed to make those decisions. Yeah, I am, but I'm also consulting with her because it is her life and it is her dreams, it is her experiences that she gets to make choices for her own free will, what she wants to do. I'm not going to push or project my things on her just because that is what I want her to do. Yes, sometimes I might step in and say, you know, well, I really think you should just at least, you know, try this if I think it's going to benefit her in the end and it's right for her and it feels right and I tap into my intuition and say, okay, is this something that will be of the best interest for my oldest? And when my middle starts doing her activities and then my youngest, you know, so I'll do that for all of them. And yeah, so I know this kind of was like a crazy turn podcast, but I wanted to keep this under 30 minutes and I'm approaching 30 minutes. So I just wanted to say that please try to listen to what your kids are telling you because they will express to you what they feel and what they think is right. And yes, they are still children. They're still learning. But guess what? Adults are learning and growing every day too. So we don't always have the answers. We don't know everything. Just because we're the parents doesn't make us smarter. We might have had more life experiences that we can use to help navigate some of those parenting situations, but we also have to take in and value our children and what they feel that they are comfortable with doing and what is right for them. Because if we tell them one thing about do what's right for you and what's comfortable for you, and then we push something on them that is not comfortable for them, we're sending mixed messages to them. And it's not easy parenting. It's not. So you're going to get it wrong sometimes, and that's okay. But if we never failed, if we never made mistakes, then we wouldn't learn. We wouldn't learn from those lessons and be able to teach those to our children. And sometimes they're going to fall and make mistakes, but you're there to kiss their boo-boo and wipe their tears and get them back up and help them go down that slide again and not have that fear to try it again. So I send you good luck. I send you love for the parenting mom that is surviving and navigating how to parent through their trauma. When I talk about getting comfortable with being uncomfortable for kids, it's about having those uncomfortable conversations. But I hope that you know there's a difference between that and forcing your kids to do something that they're uncomfortable with. So I felt the need to explain the differences between those two points because I do talk about it earlier and then bring it back up now. So I just want to make sure that's clear in case. So again, I hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you or someone you know is suicidal, please get help immediately and call 911. You can also call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-TALK. That's 1-800-273-TALK. Or text the crisis hotline at 741-741. Please do not wait. Do not be afraid to ask about suicidal thoughts. Never take warning signs lightly or promise to keep them secret. Suicide is preventable. For further information on risk factors, warning signs, what to do, and reminders for parents as well, please visit the National Association of School Psychologists. Thank Thank you for listening to this episode. Please leave feedback and let me know what topics you would like to talk about next. I'm excited to keep this journey with you, and thank you for listening to Hello Gorgeous Mama.